There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors, past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's Coolest Conversations podcast time, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Today I'm joined by Andy Babiuk of the Empty Hearts. Andy was a bass player in the long-running Chesterfield Kings, but after that ended in 2013, he helped found the Empty Hearts with Wally Palmer of the Romantics, and the rest of their lineup includes Elliot Easton from the Cars and Clem Burke from Blondie. The band's new release, titled The Second Album, is out now on Wicked Cool Records and features our recent coolest song in the world, If I Could Change Your Mind. Let's hear some of that now, and then I'll be back with Andy for your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
I can tell by the sadness on your face. Disappointment once again was my mistake.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and joining me for our coolest conversations today is Andy Babiuk, who is a bass player in the long-running Chesterfield Kings, and since 2013 is a bass player in the Empty Hearts. We're celebrating the release of their new full-length out on Wicked Cool Records called The Second Album. It features this week's coolest song in the world, If I Could Change Your Mind. Hi, Andy. How are you?
How you doing, Manfred? Always great to hear from you.
Oh, thank you so much, man. Always good speaking with you as well. I'm not sure if you recall, but you were our very first guest on our Coolest Conversations, like some 6 years ago. Did you know
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I'm honored. I remember we did it. Yeah, and I didn't even know what it was. I was like, well, okay, whatever you say. And then here we are 6 years later, and you're still doing it every Friday. And we
yeah,
hear it.
They haven't gotten any wiser, have they? And and this... I look back to when it aired. We're not like to the day that it it aired, but it was like six years ago, give or take this week. You know, it's really really close. So happy anniversary!
And the same to you. You've been doing all the heavy lifting.
Hey, now a bit. Here's more of a serious question. How have your family and friends been doing over the course of the virus so far? Is everybody healthy?
Yes, thank God up here in Rochester, New York, you know, everything seems to be okay. Obviously, we're following all the protocol and everything, but, you know, it's a very odd time for all of us, you know, everyone around the world, actually. You know, and so it's just a weird time in history, I guess.
Absolutely. Well, I'm very happy to hear that your friends and family are doing well and being healthy. Prior to the release of the new album, you guys have had two singles out on vinyl off the new album. Also, a separate digital tune came out. This is all the course of the past few months. And I've spoken with the other guys in the band. Elliot Easton, your guitar player, used to be in the Cars. Wally Palmer, frontman, used to be or still is in the Romantics. Clem Burke on drums, of course, still in Blondie. First, can you remind us how the band formed back in 2013 and your role in putting it all together?
Well, you know, like you tour with bands all the time and like you hang out backstage and, you know, you get along with certain guys and, hey, man, we should do something someday. And you just never do it, and years go on, and you run into each other, and you become friends socially, but yeah, we should get together sometime, and it just never happens. Well, Wally was on the road with Ringo, actually. He was doing a Ringo All-Star Tour. You know, he was in the band for, I think, 2.5 years, and they were going to South America. He had called me, you know, saying, hey, man, I'm going to South America. I go, yeah, well, have a lot of fun there, big shot. You know, go flying around Ringo's private plane and all that. And then it was literally off the cuff. I just said, hey, man, when you get back, we should start a band where we all get in a room and we pretend like, you know, the feeling you got when you were a kid, when you heard the Stones or the Beatles and you went out and bought a guitar and you wanted to be in a band and just like, we can write some songs and have some fun, you know? So I want to have fun playing music. And he goes, well, like, who are you thinking? I go, well, Clem Burke's the best drummer I know. And you know him really well because he played in the Romantics. And he goes, yeah, well, who else are you thinking? I said, Elliot Easton from the Cars, man. He's great. You know, he's a good friend. And you know, Clem knows him. I said, that could be a lot of fun. He goes, well, that's pretty crazy. How we all live in different cities. How are we going to do that? He goes, I go, look, just go on tour and have fun. And, you know, call me when you get back. And then, you know, a month later, he calls me and he says, hey, I was thinking about what you're saying. I think we should do it. And I literally called everybody up and we all flew out to L.A. and got in a room and just started jamming. And there you go. The Empty Yards.
Well, you follow the plan. You got into the room and you acted like, hey, we just heard the Stones and the Beatles and we want to make some music.
Yeah, literally, we just started writing some songs. You know, we jammed on a couple songs, some old standards, Chuck Berry and stuff like that. But you know, and then we just started throwing around ideas and we said, yeah, this is fun. And we did that three or four times. And then next thing you know, Clem booked a flight to come to Rochester. And he said, we should record all this stuff. He goes, I already booked a flight. And I go, oh, really? So I call the other guys. I go, hey, Clem booked a flight to come to Rochester. And I have a studio here, you know. So we just showed up. And then we brought in Ed Stasium to produce it with us. And we flew Ed in. And literally in the course of like 5 or 6 days, we cut the whole album. And that was the first album.
Oh, that is great. And now, regarding the name, Little Steven had a hand in that, right?
Well, yeah, he named us. We couldn't think of a name. Like, we had an attorney friend that was saying, look, guys, you guys got to pick a unique name because, like, every name, if it's used, you guys are clay pigeons. Everybody's going to think you're going to have tons of money. They're going to try to sue you and stuff. So they go, every time you think of a name, look it up on the internet. Sure enough, some band had it somewhere in Indonesia or some wacky place. You know, right. And we couldn't think of a cool name. So we were asking some friends. You know, we asked Andrew Lou Goldham. We asked different friends. Obviously, we asked Steven. He had this secret list of, you know, 25 names that he sent. And lo and behold, almost all of them were used.
Oh.
And so I sent him a text. I said, Steven, all these are used. And he didn't believe it. So he got one of his assistants to look it all up. And they were pretty much all used. So he was all pissed. So about a month later, I got a text message from him. And it said something to the effect of, hey, you guys think of a name for your freaking band yet? And I said, no. And so he says, you're going to be called the Empty Hearts. I said so. So I copied the whole thing and I sent it to the three other guys as a text. And I said, hey, I just got this from Little Steven. I guess we're going to be called the Empty Hearts unless any of you guys want to argue with Silvio Dante. So I guess that's how we got our name.
Well, cool. So there were no runner-up names. I mean, that was it.
Yeah, you know, there were tons of names, but somebody somewhere is using it. And it's tough to find a name that's not used unless it's some wacky name. So it's just how it was. And oddly enough, that wasn't really used. So, like, you know, we just adopted it, and here we are, the Empty Hearts.
Very cool. So we talked briefly about that first album. When did you start on this follow-up, and where did you record it?
We recorded it again here in Rochester. The guys wanted to. We had done like a Christmas single that we recorded in L.A., but it was really difficult to record there because people knew we were recording, so our friends kept on coming in every half an hour, doors opening. It's another one of our friends. We couldn't get anything done. So the guys were like, look, let's just do it in Rochester. Nobody bugs us. It's a private studio. It will get a lot done. And so we were writing songs off and on. You know, the guy, you know, Clem was busy with Blondie touring and they had put out an album. So he was out on the road for like a year and a half.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was busy doing stuff. So we would fit times in where we get together and write stuff. And then once we had like, you know, I think 20 songs or so, then we got together and recorded them.
We mentioned Ed Stasium working, producing on the first album, and I see that he also did the new one. Did you ever work with Ed prior to, before the Empty Hearts?
Yeah, with the Chesterfield Kings. As a matter of fact, Kurt Loder introduced me to him, man, years ago. I think when we did the Berlin Wall of Sound or something.
Okay.
And we worked with him then, so I had known Ed. And again, we just always stayed friends. And he mixed a couple of the last Chesterfield Kings albums. And, and when we were doing, you know, when we were getting ready to record, I said, you know, we should get a good producer. How about Ed Stasium? And everybody had worked with him also independently. And so there was a natural fit. Ed's a great guy. He's the best.
Well, between yourself and the other guys in the Empty Hearts and Ed, there's already, there's so much rock and roll history there. In fact, I ought to plug Ed a little bit more in case, you know, someone's not more familiar with him. He's produced and engineered the likes of the Ramones and the Talking Heads, Motorhead, the Smithereens, Hoodoo Gurus, Reverend Horton. He had a ton of stuff. But between all you guys, there's so much rock and roll history. And with Ed in the mix, I have to imagine there are a lot of great stories. Do any come to mind?
Oh, yeah. And the fun thing about the Empty Hearts, the real rule and the motto of the band is we have to have fun. That was amongst the four of us. Like, we have to have fun. The minute it's not fun, we'll stop.
Yeah,
we're not doing it. It wasn't, I mean, we've all been in bands and are in bands that, you know, you've got to deal with all kinds of headaches and drama and stuff. Nobody wants that.
Yeah.
It's all about the music and having fun making the music and not making it a business or headaches and all that. So, yeah, and even the recording, all that, it's always fun. We take a real fun stance to it. And then I think that kind of shows in the music. So we've been told, people say, yeah, you could tell it sounds like you guys are having fun, you know.
Well, you guys are there in the studio and you got Ed, and I imagine, you know, you're having fun, as you said, you're sharing stories. So who was the one that would have to step in and say, all right, guys, we got to get to work. We've been talking now for like 3 hours. You know, we got to get something knocked out.
Well, yeah. It's more goofing around than it is just talking. Ed would kind of keep us in line, you know, okay, as the producer does. And,
yeah,
and, you know, he knows what songs, he knows the body of work we got to get done. You know, obviously everybody flies in from other cities and you know, we got to find that amount of time to do it. So we got to, you know, chip away at it. So, yeah, we were pretty diligent about it. And the cool thing is because I have like all these instruments in the studio on this album, we really spread out and wanted to, you know, utilize different sounds. We've got a lot of Mellotron on there, a lot of stuff, to everything from sitars to dulcimers, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know, every guitar you can imagine, every amp sound. I mean, we were really experimenting. So we're busy doing it, but we're having fun doing it. Like,
yeah,
it was a riot, you know.
Well, 13 songs on the new album. Prior to getting together, were you emailing ideas back and forth and hashing some stuff out ahead of time? Or was it, I mean, did the whole songwriting process take place while you were together there in Rochester?
We got together a bunch of times, you know, Wally and I would get together and, or you would fly out to LA and go to Elliot's house and get together. I mean, you know, and then I remember one session where Clem was playing a guitar case, like with sticks, you know. I mean, the songwriting process is actually a lot of fun in our band because, you know, Elliot might have this great riff or some cool thing and then we'll take it and mutate it. And by the time the song's done, it's far different, but it starts with some guy's idea and we entertain everything, you know. Wally will have an idea and then all of a sudden it mutates into something else or myself. And it's very organic and it was designed to be that way. We all write the songs together and everybody has a different input and every song's a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know, have different guys input stronger or less or whatever.
Well, let's talk specifically about our coolest song in the world this week, If I Could Change Your Mind. So what's the genesis of that? Did Elliot have some riff laying around? What was the initial inspiration?
I think Wally had come here to Rochester and we were goofing around with something. I think on the way to the studio, we were listening to the Beatles For Sale album or something.
Uh-huh.
And you know how you just listen to music and it's just in the back of your head. And I think Wally was playing some chords at the studio and we started messing around. And then I think a few weeks later, we came here again and Elliot was here. And then Elliot kind of rewrote part of the middle section of the song. And then, you know, it evolved like that. You know what I mean? So, you know, and then by the time, you know, we worked on it with Clem was changing some of the, you know, the structure, the way the flow of the beat went, you know, mm-hmm. What I'd play on the bass and stuff. So it was very organic.
Well, I love that, Wally's got the harp solo on that one. So was that something he wanted to do when you were first putting the song together, or did somebody say, hey, Wally, you need to blow your brains out on this one?
Well, yeah, because, you know, I mean, with What I Like About You, that's like a famous harmonica part. Everybody
right.
knows that part. It's very melodic, you know, very John Lennon-esque.
Yeah.
And, you know, he even says that he's very much inspired with the way Lennon played harp, like playing a melody. And so, and Empty Heart stuff, even on the first album, was like, wow, you gotta throw some harp on some songs. You know, on this album, I think he does it on 3 or 4 songs.
Yeah.
He puts harp on it, which, I mean, he's a really good harp player. So it was kind of his signature instrument thing that he added to the song.
That was great. It's killer. So let's see, I mentioned a couple of singles that came out earlier. It was Coat Tailor, Remember Days Like These, both vinyl singles. A couple of weeks ago, we started playing the track The Best That I Can, which was a digital single at the time. Cut off the new album we haven't mentioned or talked about is Jonathan Harker's Journal. So who is a vampire fan in The Empty Hearts?
Oh, we all are. We love the old monster movies, you know, all the Universal stuff, the Hammer stuff. For a lot of people have never read Bram Stoker's actual book, you know, that came out in the 1800s. But if you read it, as I imagine you have, because I know you're into it as well, you know, the chapters are all, you know, Jonathan Harker's journal. And it's a, you know, perspective of him writing the story of chasing around this Dracula character. So I had been I had just seen you know, every October I watch all the Universal monster movies all the time. I just watched Dracula, and then, you know, I was reading the book too, and I was like, oh, you know, we should write a song. You know how Dylan would like put the title, but the title's never in the song,
right?
And then take it a step further and never mention Dracula or vampire or anything, but write it about that whole thing, and you'd have to really listen to it. And Wally had this great creepy riff that he had just had for a long time. I said, let's turn that into a song, it'd be great. And so that, there you go.
Well, that's very cool. Wally had that riff because the riff is really cool. And I was, you know, that's great. So the sound effects at the top of that song include a squeaky door and a hooting owl, kind of helps set the spooky atmosphere. You got More Rain on the track, The World As We Know It. And then The Haunting of the Tin Soldiers got this sort of tolling bell. Now, you mentioned earlier about the Mellotron and kind of trying to spread out using instruments. But you're also spreading out using some sound effects here. So is there anybody in the band real big on sound effects, or these tunes just happen to specifically call for sound effects?
You know, it was really just like, working on Jonathan Harker's Journal, we just thought it'd be kind of cool to have, like, as if it was like an opening casket, right?
Right.
We literally had a door in the studio that was squeaky, and at about 3 o'clock in the morning, we recorded it with Ed. We're all laughing again. Look how crazy we are at 3 o'clock in the morning recording a door. You know, how stupid. But the end result is great, you know. And then we asked Ed to throw in some, you know, if you listen to it, you could picture it in your head. And so that was, you know, Ed put in the rain and the thunder and the squawking bird and all that stuff. It gives you like a creepy, cool atmosphere before the song even starts. And then Elliot plays that cool riff, and it kind of sets a mood. It was the whole idea. And then The World As We Know It, Wally had the idea of just putting waves in it because the lyrics of the song, it's just like the world keeps on moving on and on. And then when we were doing The Haunting of the Tin Soldier, we were figuring out how we're going to, like, really cutting the song. We're figuring out how to come up with the beginning. And I think maybe Elliot or Wally came up with the idea of, you know, somebody marching to the gallows, you know, the snare with the kick drum. And then, we found it on the Mellotron, it had like a bell. And we put that in there, like the tolling of the bells. It was just like evolution of songs. And the cool thing was when you listen to the album all the way straight through, Ed did a cool thing where he kind of seamed the songs together. So one kind of flows into the other. There's quite a few songs that do that. And that was Ed's creation, which was, you know, that's why he's such a great producer. Brilliant.
Absolutely. Well, given that there's no touring right now, are you guys planning on doing like any upcoming streaming events?
Well, you know, the technology on that is so weird. You know, we thought about it. It gets kind of a little wacky. So we have quite a few videos that we ended up doing. So I think two of them are out so far, but there's coat tailor. There's a video that's been done for quite a long time, but they held it till the album release date. And there's yet another one for another song off the album, Come On and Try It. And speaking of Jonathan Harker's journal, there will be another one that will be released in just in time for Halloween. And it'll come out with a limited edition 45 on orange and black swirl vinyl.
Oh, that is so cool.
Told you we like Halloween.
Well, I'm so excited that you guys are going to turn it into a Halloween release. So what will you put on the B-side of that?
The Haunting of the Tin Soldier.
All right. Okay. Yeah. I wanted to ask you about the Tin Soldier thing. Does anybody have like a little soldiers? Was that like a specific, and one of the guys looked over to his shelf or still had like a little toy soldier and that inspired the idea? Or was it more like kind of a variation on Small Faces Tin, well, sort of thinking of something else along the lines of it?
Obviously, we're all like big, big fans of all the British cool bands, right? You know, from back in the day. And like, ironically, like a ton of those bands, everybody from Donovan to the Kinks, they're all referencing a Tin Soldier all the time. So, you know, we were talking amongst ourselves, we're going to have a song and put Tin Soldier in there. It's just like, we have to, you know? And we were working on this song. Elliot had these cool riffs that were like really like kind of dark sounding and like, oh, this is really kind of weird and creepy cool. And I think me and Wally were at my house in my home studio, and we were talking about The Outer Limits and Twilight Zone. And there's that one episode where Telly Savalas thinks that the doll's talking to him, but it's not. But then at the end, you don't know if it's real. So I came up with this idea of a tin soldier sitting on a shelf, and he's looking at this guy, and this guy's like lamenting that this tin soldier doesn't get older, but he is year after year, and he's had it ever since he was a kid, and it's driving him nuts. And you don't know if the tin soldier is actually really alive and talking to this guy, or this guy's insane. So it's just that bizarre twist that, you know, I like all that weird stuff. So we kind of wrote the song like that. It's pretty haunted. So we called it The Haunting of the Tin Soldier. The tin soldier's haunting this old guy.
Well, that one comes across great too. And I'm glad you found the bell button on the Mellotron.
Oh, yeah.
cool. You know, I want to ask you, you've got this really cool vintage music shop there in Rochester, Fab Gear. How are things going with the shop in the midst of the pandemic?
You know, it's a really weird thing, because when the pandemic first started, you know, New York State, the governor closed everything, and we've been closed, but our online business has been crazy. I guess everybody's stuck at home, bored out of their gourds, and they're wanting to play guitars. They're playing guitars, which I'm not complaining. So, you know, the shop does quite well, actually.
Oh, wow. Great. That's great. I'm very happy about that. And you're also an author responsible for two definitive books on the music equipment used by either the Beatles or Rolling Stones. There's Beatles gear, all the Fab Four's instruments from stage to studio, and similarly, Rolling Stones gear, all the Stones instruments from stage to studio. Do you have any other books in the pipeline, working on any other projects?
You know, I also did the history, the Paul Bigsby book, which is you know, the history of the first electric guitar. He did it before Leo Fender. Les Paul, I got a lot of shit for that book, because everybody said, Leo Fender did it. Les Paul did it. Actually not. You know, Paul Bigsby actually did it. I just told the story. Anyhow, I love writing books, but I also don't love writing books. So I've been asked to write a lot of other books on a lot of other topics. I want to concentrate on making music at this point. So that's why I'm putting all my efforts into, writing songs with the guys in Empty Hearts.
Excellent. Well, the other cut we want to hear off of the new album, the second album, is Well Look at You. And the guitar licks and the horns, to me at least, give this kind of 60s soul vibe. It's got that cool Get Off My Cloud kind of drum intro. Well, tell me about that song. How did the various parts sort of meld together?
Well, it's a really weird song, because did you ever have one of those dreams where like you're so vivid, you can't believe that it's not true, you know? So I had one of those weird dreams that I was backstage at a Stones show, and I'm talking to Mick Jagger, and he says, "Hey, Andy, I have this song that I think would work great for the Empty Hearts." And he like literally like sang it to me. I mean, I'm serious. And it was so vivid that like I woke up and I'm going, wow, that was weird. And I had my phone there. So I hummed it all into my iPhone. It's like 3:30 in the morning or something. I went back to bed. And the next morning I look and I go, oh, wow. And I had been talking to Wally that morning. I said, hey man, the weirdest thing happened. I got this song. And he had been scheduled to come to town a couple weeks later. And so we pulled it out and started working on it. And then Elliot put all those cool guitar riffs in it. And then,
Then
we had the idea of getting the Uptown Horns to play the horn section on it. And they did a marvelous job arranging the horns on it. It's a lot of fun. That song is an R&B kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So have you had a chance to chat with Sir Mick about it and say, hey, thanks for the song?
No, I was, you know, listen, because of the COVID thing, I was all excited to go visit, you know, when they played in Buffalo here this summer. I think there was like the beginning of June. We were all scheduled to go and, you know, hang and say hi and everything. And then obviously the COVID thing happened. Nobody's touring anywhere in the world. So, but no, it's just a weird dream. Like you have these dreams and sometimes songs come to you magically like that. And it was just so bizarre that who would think, but it's a good thing. Cause you never remember it. Like I'll remember it, but I've learned not to do that. I always try to use my phone and like hum it into it because then you get some good ideas. And this just happened to be like almost a complete thing, you know?
Right, right. Well, you know, I guess in another age you could have had a tape recorder sitting there, but operating that, you know, in the middle of the night, I think that would have been harder than just singing it into your phone.
Yeah. Good thing
Andy,
for technology.
I have to thank you again for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Always a pleasure talking to you, Manfred.
Yeah,
great job on your show. We always listen to the mighty Manfred.
Well, thank you so much. The admiration is mutual. And we're going to take a listen now to that other track off the new album, the second album. Here's Well Look at You from the Empty Hearts and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
There we go.
You. That's the Empty Hearts here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. And that track is off their latest release titled The Second Album, out on Wicked Cool Records. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to their bassist, Andy Babu, for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. Be sure and join me next week when I'll check in with the prolific prince of power pop, Kurt Baker. We'll find out all about his upcoming new album. That's your next week's Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
There's a place in New York where you can walk through the actual front doors of the world's most famous recording studio, Abbey Road. Through those doors, past the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, and countless other rock giants. Where can you find those doors? At the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. The Abbey Road doors and thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock Cafes, Hard Rock Casinos, and Hard Rock Hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.